Good evening. We're going to call the meeting to order tonight at 7:03. Can we all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance
To the
to
flag of the
the
United States
America,
of America and
Republic.
to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, anybody that is on Zoom, can you just please mute your mic? Okay, will the clerk call the roll?
Gino Di Giovanni,
Here.
Richard Bartholomew, Paul Denise,
Here.
David Kupchansky,
Here.
Aniello Di Malerba III,
Here.
Albert Oni, is that you?
Yes, it is. Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Albert Mizowitz, Raymond Sadlick, Joseph Soika.
Here.
So the record should reflect you have five regular members and one alternate present. So you have a quorum.
Good, thank you. For the purpose of tonight's meeting, we're going to sit Joe Soika as the alternate as a voting member. Are there any objection? Okay, if no objection, we'll move on. The number four, additions, deletions, corrections to the agenda. I have one addition. We're going to add to line item C. We're going to add 11C, informal discussion for the 26-27 fiscal budget information for planning and purpose of downtown planning for discussion only. Does anybody have anything else to add? Okay, if not, can I have a
Gino,
motion? Yes? Who's that?
can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Kev.
How's it going, buddy?
Good, yourself?
Not too bad. I've talked to this with Attorney Lima. Brian, are you on tonight too?
He is.
No.
I'm under items 9B and 10B. They have public hearing for the application on 80 Selmac Road. And then 9B, Johnny Hutchins special exception application. Can't have an application unless the zone change is approved, which is a future action. So technically, you can't have an application until the 9A is either approved or disapproved, which also carries on for 10B. So it's my recommendation that you take off 9B and 10B until such action is either approved or disapproved for tonight's meeting.
All right.
Hold on.
So, yes, I would agree with Kevin that that we did discuss that, and I think there's no issue with it having on the agenda and the application being filed, but until the actual zone te text change is acted upon by this board, and if adopted, it would need to be published and have an effective date before.
Two applications can be heard together.
Well, yes, you can hear them together, but you're not going to be able to act on this special exception application until after the regulation becomes effective.
The other boards have said you can act on the special exception application.
Yeah, I think in the interest of efficiency, you could present the zone text application and the special exception application tonight in the public hearing, but I think as a matter of housekeeping, we're not going to be able to formally act, assuming that the reg change is adopted. I don't think it makes sense to actually vote on the special exception application until such time as
Some of this differently. I've been before other towns where understood that it isn't effective until after the zone change. but they vote on it.
So if it's not effective, there's no sense. You can't even have an application until such time as it becomes effective. You can't do something for future activity, and the activity has to be done tonight before you can go forward to the next step.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I think given Brian's advice before, we can hear both applications. Yeah. It just said the commission cannot act on the special exception application until such time as the zone text amendment is acted on, and go from there.
Okay.
But having both applications present is not uncommon for a text amendment that's coupled with a application that would follow.
Agreed.
That's
all right. So, go ahead, David.
No.
All right. So we have for line item number four, we have an addition to the agenda, 11C. Do I have a motion to put that on the agenda? Okay, Paul, second. David, all in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay, so we're going to add 11C. All right. I'm sorry? I have 11 A and B only. Do you have something different?
Is this under old business?
Yeah.
They removed item C, the subcommittee pre-application.
Okay. I wasn't aware.
So we're good with it to be 11C, correct?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Motion carries. So, all right. Moving on to number five, communications. I have none. Anybody? Ryan? If there are none, we'll move on to number six, public portion. If there's anyone either on online or in the audience, that like to speak on anything but on what we have for 9A, public hearing, and then 9B, you can do so now. If you wish to speak on 9A or 9B for the public hearing, you can hold your comments until we open up the public hearing, and then you'll be able to speak at that time. So if anybody has any comments in the public portion for tonight's meeting other than our public hearings, you can unmute your mic and say so now. Just if you're online, please just state your name and address for the record. And if you are here in the audience, just walk up to the microphone, turn it on, and state your name and address, please.
Can I go ahead? Or is somebody up at the mic?
Hold on 1 second, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tim.
Tim Marin, 195 Sentinel Hill Road. Trying to find more progress in regards to property line between the Christian Center and then our property at 195 Sentinel Hill Road.
Kevin, I know that you're on.
Yeah. So
you're on the call. Do you have an update for?
Yes. Yep. Yes, I do. We met with several members of the church last week. Some of them were new to the information group. And we presented them again with the request that the Marins had about the arborvitaes and whatever buffer needed between the two property lines. They are definitely... let's just say that some of them were not even aware of that, although we have been discussing it for a while. And they were amicable to doing something in the near future. They are looking at also trying to develop some additional plans for new work coming in the back of the church, which may or may not present it in the coming months. But they're working on it. I've asked them to tone down the lights in the parking lot, and at which they were surprised because they've had discussions with the Marins saying that because of vandalisms and people hanging out in the parking lots, they wanted the lights on. So there's a little confusion there as to whether they want them on or they don't want them on. So we're working on that. But we are trying to make some progress and we'll continue to do so.
The lights that you're talking about, they're faced right at the house. And that was the
problem. I don't think that that's true. I've been up there. I've looked at them during the night. They're at least, and I'm going to say, because I could judge things by the length of football fields, at least 3/4 of a football field away from your house as the closest one. Do they shine over the property lines? I'm not sure. I may ask them for a light pollution study, but to say that they're shining at your house, I think is a little bit, I don't know. I don't want to say.
No, it is
zealous, but
not because
okay. I'm not
from the church towards our
house.
I'm
not arguing with you. I am not arguing.
So we
not arguing. I said, I'm not arguing with you.
No, I agree, but I'm not arguing either, but. It's if you're at the bottom of our driveway and you look up, it looks like a stadium is there.
And I asked them, listen to me, let me finish. I've asked them to turn them off unless there was an event on. And they said, because of your request, you wanted to keep them on because there was a lot of people hanging out in the parking lot and causing a lot of problems. So, I mean, we're trying to get the story straight.
Well, first of all, that's not true that I never made that statement. But, you know, the fact remains, you know, whether or not we do want them on or don't want them off on, doesn't matter. The problem is that there is a security issue up there. And those lights were put in without even a permit. And talking to the UI.
They didn't put them in. Those lights were there before these people bought.
No, that's not true. She's been living there for over 35 years and, well, longer than that. And the reality of it is they put in additional 4 poles by the UI. I spoke to the UI gentleman, Mike, and he clearly stated this. Whoa, 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 that's a loaded question. And I said, what's a loaded question? The permits. So lights were put in with, I don't know who did the permits, and I can't even get to the bottom of that. But there were 2 aluminum post lights that are on the northbound side, and they were always there. They put in 2 additional poles and 2 more on the south side. So we're just trying to get the city to help us because we live there. They're there once a week. We're there 7 days a week, and we just want our privacy and quiet and to enjoy our home. That's all we're asking for.
And we're working for the same cause. We're both on the same side here.
I understand.
Excuse me, Kevin. This has been a topic of discussion for quite a while now. Is there obviously from your comments, there might be some newer people there that weren't aware of the existing or pre-existing
true.
Or what have you. What I'd like to do is, if you can send a letter to the church or
I'm doing even better than that. I'm going to try to meet. I'm trying to meet them next week.
Okay. Well, I would like you to send a letter to the board of directors, and I'd like to schedule a meeting that their board of directors or whomever the powers in charge are to meet with them, membership or representatives of the city, and then also with Nancy and Tim, so that no matter what happens going forward, they can come to some type of agreement, but the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. And then this way here, the new management and also the residents there could all be on the same page. Where it goes from there, that is to be determined, but at least their request, the church's request, and the city's request will all be ironed out, and maybe we could make some progress on that.
Just for the record, I'd like to state that this has been going on since 2023.
Yep.
And that's, we've been patient. We really have been patient. And it's till we have to come down here and do this in front of the zoning board. We have rules and regulations, and we've read them. And we just feel we want to go by the rules and regulations that the city of Derby put in for zoning. Mm-hmm. And that's all we're asking for. We're not asking much more than that. And it just seems like we're getting pushed off and pushed off and pushed off, and we're just frustrated. We want to enjoy our home. We appreciate some help from the zoning board.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Marin, when was this lighting installed?
Approximately, I'm going to say probably like August of 2024. That's when I contacted Mike from the UI. When I saw him going in, I went out and talked to him, and he gave me his number. He was really great. And then when they finally went in, I went out to talk to him again, and that's when he said to me, I said, well, who pulled the permit? And he says, whoa, 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 that's a loaded question. And, you know, when anybody says something like that to you, you kind of say to yourself, well, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm just trying to do, is get to the bottom of this, because, you know, you could solve this parking lot with just a simple gate. I've checked the area of other Christian centers, and they have gates that close it so people don't come and do what they got to do, like burnouts that are going on, you know, because of the snow.
I, you know, I can't address those issues.
No, I know.
But, you know, the lighting should have had a building permit.
Yeah.
And that's a question that should be posed to the building inspector. And the other thing is, we do have lighting standards within our zoning requirements. So the letter should be pretty stern to get the church to come in here and show us the design fixtures that are up there. And they should have cutoffs, because that's what the regulations require.
Yeah. And so, there's no site map whatsoever. Site plan at all.
So, Kevin, I'd like to see that letter be kind of strong and state that and direct the church to come in to see us.
You got it.
Anything else?
No. I thank you very much for your... Thank you, everyone.
You're quite welcome.
Sorry to have to go through this. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sir, I didn't catch your name on Zoom, but I know that you wanted to speak. Go ahead. If you just unmute your mic now.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Nino Nocella. I live at 5 Lanzieri Court in Derby, Connecticut. I'm on for the D-Basin issues that we have going on here. What I'm trying to find out is who is actually in charge of making sure that the proper maintenance gets done to this basin, such as dredging. And according to the last report in 2022, the concrete, I don't know what you want to call it, pillar or the where the water goes, it's supposed to be blocked because an additional V was put in it. Right now, it's to the point where with this basin, the last time they did the test, there was about 2 feet of sediment that needed to be removed. Now it's to the point where the inlet pipe, I can't even see it anymore. There's just a little drainage. I mean, the basin's not working. The water comes in and goes right out. We also have about 72 houses that are paying $100 a year to actually properly maintain this basin. It is the basin. I think Kathleen Norwood is the one that is in charge of it. I just want to know who has to oversee this and whether or not it gets done properly, because when we were on speaking terms with the Norwoods, they said that the city of Derby is in charge of that. But according to everything I'm reading, it clearly states that us paying the dues is meant for the maintenance of the basin. All they do is mow around the outside, and they just clear the trees in the middle, like every 3 to 4 years. And then the other thing I was asking was, I had Mike here from the city of Derby. And he was telling me that my neighbor, Scott, at 6 Lanzieri, it's showing that his property line actually comes right up to my fence. But if you guys come down Lanzieri Court, you see this big fence that's put up with all these signs, and the actual easement looks like they took it over. I mean, I don't know if they're supposed to do that.
It's the entrance to the
basin. It is the entrance to the basin that they did. And I know I work with a utility company. I know easements usually is the owner of the property, and it just gives the other people access to get to where they have to get to, not that they take over the whole piece of property. So I'm just wondering what the status is on all of that. And I would like to see some action taken where this basin gets done properly, because as you recall, back in the day on Sodom Lane, we had some pretty bad flooding, which had to do with this basin not working properly. So I don't know who would address that.
Yep, Mr. Nocella, it's on our agenda for discussion tonight on 11B.
Yes,
I'm not
I
sure
saw
if
that.
You could see it.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah,
we will be discussing that later in the agenda, and I think some or all of your questions will be answered at that time in greater detail. If there is any other questions that you do have that don't get answered, you could just reach out to me and we will answer those. You could give me an email, but we're going to be discussing that later.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to speak in-house here? Anyone else on Zoom wish to speak? Third and final time, anyone from the public wish to speak? Okay, with none being...
Yes, hold on. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, ma'am. Just state your
name.
My
name is... Hi, good evening. My name is Christiana Manchester. I'm calling from 2 Homestead Avenue in Derby. Have we started the discussion regarding Stelmach yet?
Oh, no, ma'am. We will... that'll be under 9A for public hearing. We'll open it up. If you have comments just on that... you'll be able to speak at that time.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Third and last time, if there's anybody else from the public that wishes to speak. If not, can I have a motion to close the public portion, please?
I'll make a motion.
Joe, second?
Second.
Raymond, all in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay, we'll move on to... number 7, approval of minutes. We have none. Can I have a motion to table, please?
Motion to table.
Joe, second.
I'll second.
Paul, all in favor? Okay, motion carries. We'll move on to number 8, receipt of applications. We have none. 9A. Public hearing, 9A, Johnny Hudson, 80 Stelmach Road, proposed zone text change to 195.11, residential R3 zone, subsection D, 195.54, parking spaces, numbers, and location, new line for bed and breakfast. Do I have a motion to open the public hearing?
Motion to open the public hearing.
Joe, second. Raymond?
Yeah, go ahead.
9A, all in favor? Okay, the public hearing is now open. Counselor?
Thank you, Attorney Dominic Thomas, Cohen and Thomas, 315 Main Street, Derby, Connecticut, representing the applicant. Changes in case somebody forgot to.
I did
print out extra copies of the text changes and extra copies of the special exception packet of exhibits if anybody needs them, that were because they were presented and I understand passed out a couple of meetings ago. If you're just going to open the text change application and not refer to, I will not refer to the site. I will refer to the text change proposal. The text change proposal is to change 195-11 in the residential R3 zone at subsection D and in 19554 parking spaces. It's to address bed and breakfast. I will call to your attention that you define bed and breakfast in your regulations. It's mentioned a few times. And on page 12 of your regulations and definitions, it's defined as an owner-occupied dwelling unit that contains no more than three guest rooms where lodging with or without meals is provided for compensation. In addition, you have a, not that it really applies here, but I just wanted to point out, you have a definition of tourist home on page 40 of your regulations that says, see bed and breakfast. I don't know what that means, but I just wanted to note that I went through and every place it mentions bed and breakfast. And then you have bed and breakfast as a special exception use in two zones. You have it as a special exception use in the R4 and R5 zones, not in the other zones. Having spent a good portion of my later years being a bed and breakfast aficionado and going places and staying at them all over New England and the United States, I found it a little confusing that they were in the two smaller zones, but they can be easily adapted in the smaller zones. Bed and breakfasts are usually relatively low traffic. You know, you have some guests, you basically equate the traffic with the number of rooms you have, and they can, you know, the people stay there, they sleep, and sometimes they're fed a good breakfast. Sometimes it can get very fancy. And the biggest issue with bed and breakfast often is parking. In other words, having a lot large enough that there'd be parking for the guests. Here, you limit it to three rooms. So you're basically only talking about three cars plus the owner-occupant's cars, assuming there is an owner-occupant, okay? Now, you require it in your definition. It says owner-occupied dwelling unit. In a lot of other areas, bed and breakfast can be separate. They can be inns, as you call them. So, for example, I've stayed numerous places, Pacific Grove, California, other places, Carmel, where you're going into an inn that's called a bed and breakfast that has seven rooms, eight rooms. The occupant doesn't stay there. There's an innkeeper. The innkeeper comes and basically sometimes leaves at night, you know what I mean, and doesn't overnight. This isn't what you have in your definition. So you're in the residential zones. What I did is asked that it be in the as a special exception. And as if you have the attachment, I put it in red as to where it goes. And for under special exceptions in the R3 zone, which of course has a larger the R3 zone, which is now a 15,000 square foot minimum, adding in D special exceptions, adding subsection 10. And the reason I stuck it in there is because I wanted to put it above educational dormitory residents and bed and breakfast with no more than three guest rooms, as is equivalent with your definition to allow it in the R3 zone. I did not go beyond that to see whether it would put in the R1 or R2 zone, but I just put it because that's what my client, her property is in the R3 zone. I then looked at your 19554 and your regulations. And you did have it had nothing pertaining to bed and breakfast, even though you had bed and breakfast in two of the uses. You did have a rooming house dormitory where it was 0.5 space per guest room. And I do know that some people that stay in bed and breakfast now in the more modern age use Uber and things of that nature. But normally it's a couple or someone coming in and they're staying in the bed and breakfast for one night, two nights, three nights, depending on the circumstances. So I added residential bed and breakfast at one space per guest room to address the parking issue that would be required. In addition, of course, bed and breakfasts are in the other two zones and in the proposed zone are a special exception. which means you get to consider, even though it's a permitted use, you get to consider the considerations under your special exception regulations. So I think that the zone text change is relatively straightforward. You, under your special exception application, can consider the site that it's being proposed on, whether or not there are sufficient parking, whether or not there are any other issues. It would seem from the fact that it's a special exception use in the R4 and 5 zone that the commission, if it hasn't already addressed, that when it was put in there, it's put in there in the R4 and 5 to address the fact that it, in the smaller zones, if it does have an impact upon adjacent properties, it's something that might not be appropriate in a certain location, which is some of the discretion you have in the special exception regulations. So with that, I'll answer any questions about the regulation.
Go ahead, David.
It's Dominic. I notice you only made two changes for the bed and breakfast here. One was with the parking. The other one was you changed the language of the previous bed and breakfast special exception, which just called the bed and breakfast in the R5 zone and in the R4 zone. Why didn't you mention in there also the owner occupancy requirements? That's in our definition.
Because that would be the definition would control. I copy the words for the definition. The other ones, Yeah, but the other ones just said bed and breakfast in. The other ones didn't.
Coming back to the definition.
I
thought it strange that you just didn't carry over the same bed and breakfast in that was in the R4 zone and in the R5 zone.
I didn't think the word in had any significance.
Well, it seems like you looked at the regulations.
Oh, I did. I did. I put the limitation on the three in there.
Now,
The easiest way to change it, because you can approve, deny, or modify, is in the regulations, bed and breakfast with no more than three restrooms, you can just say bed and breakfast in accordance with the definition herein in section, whatever that section is.
You said that you're a bed and breakfast aficionado.
Yes.
So you've been in ones in Connecticut. Quite a few municipalities in Connecticut have bed and breakfasts.
Correct.
And they have lots of regulations with the operation of them. Okay. If you look at any of the shoreline towns, okay, there's a restriction on the number of occupants. There's a restriction on the length of stay. There's a restriction on outdoor activities. Okay. Those are written right into the regulations. And I think that's probably a smart thing. I don't know, man, what your business plan is for the operation of this bed and breakfast, but I think it would be very, very helpful to write in some of the restrictions that other towns have into our regulations as an amendment, as you did with the R3 zone. And because we don't want to leave it up to, special exception use, you're going to require something on one property, but not on another property. That gets very arbitrary.
Well, one of the reasons why I didn't is because you already have it as a use in that language. I mean, if you feel that more is needed, I have faith in the commission that they can operate under the special exception standards and go through the special exception standards. Exactly. But certainly you have a serious limitation, having gone to bed and breakfast. You have a serious limitation there by limiting it to three rooms.
Three rooms and doesn't tell you anything about the number of occupants. Most towns limit the number of occupants, not just the number. Number of rooms is limited to three rooms by state statute, okay? But there's nothing that limits.
Excuse me? By state statute?
State absolutely created the regulations in the building code for bed and breakfast.
There's a lot of bed and breakfasts that that I've stayed in Connecticut, in Old Lyme and in Norfolk, and I'm not talking that have six or seven guest rooms.
They didn't have, that's not a bed and breakfast.
That's a short-term stay facility. That's not a bed and breakfast. Different set of rules altogether. We don't have a short-term stay regulation in Derby, and it's not a permitted use or a special exception use.
All right. Well, I followed your own regulations that you didn't have any definitions with it in the R3 and R4. So is what you're saying is
it's not a permitted use or a special exception use in the R3 zone.
R4 and R5. I'm sorry. In the R4 and R5. Yeah. Well, a special exception.
So how many special exception applications for bed and breakfast you think Derby has received? Our zoning regulations are 26 years old. This year.
I have no idea.
Zero. Okay.
Okay.
That's why it was never addressed. You're the first one.
Okay.
You're a pathfinder.
Well, this. I mean, I assume it was put in there with the consideration that the commission would be able to make appropriate determination.
We have other items that are special exception items in our regulations also that don't have a description or overseeing regulation. That's why they're special exceptions, so that the commission or the applicant can create a regulation to control these types of uses. We have the same thing with auto repair business. It's in our regulations, but we don't have any kind of a controlling regulation for it like we do with other items. So that's what I'm looking for.
Well, I mean, you have in your regulations, and you have your special exception considerations. Your special exception considerations that you have and that are basically similar in most allow you to take into account the intensity of the use and the location within the zone, within the neighborhood that the proposed use is going. And these are the factors that you would do it. So once you get to the special exception, you get to make the determination on a case-by-case basis. And like, for example, when you have a piece of property that is a larger piece of property in the zone, that has sufficient buffering, that has an abundance area for parking, then those are all the type of things you do. But if you pass a regulation, if you put a regulation and says all the parking has to be in back, well, you've eliminated a lot of possible bed and breakfast under your own definition by making a determination that all of it has to be in back, even though in the front there is an appropriate buffer existing on the property. So you would eliminate that person from being able to go forward. So I think the intent of putting it in your regulations was the intent that you as the commission could determine it in a case-by-case basis, because that's what the special exception does.
I think that's too arbitrary. You can place controls in the special exception section of our regulations that's specific to bed and breakfast without making it overly burdensome.
Well,
and as an example, please investigate what other towns have written into their regulations for bed and breakfast. There's a slew of them, easy to find on the internet.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Orange just adopted one, in October. Ridgefield just.
If I were coming in. With a regulation for a B&B, which a B&B where you did not have it in your regulations, right now, I'm looking at a set of regulations which allows a B&B in the R3 and R4 zone.
Regulations, you're looking at a definition. That's a different animal. You're looking at a definition.
You'll allow it,
Dave. They're allowed. They would be reviewed. If a property came in the R4 district with a special exception application under bed and breakfast, there'd be no parking standard to apply to it. You just have to look at the appropriateness of the location and what the specifics of it. But that's how the procedure would go.
You could also say, wait a minute, this is a big change of a use. This is a business use in a residential zone. We want more than just the opinion of the commission.
to set a standard for this. We want a standard in our regulations.
Well, that's what the regulations say for the. Now, there's no regulation in the R3 right now. That's why they're here. So,
well, it's not a permitted or a special exception use in the R3. That's
right. Well, it is in the R4 or R5. So, if someone came in with an R4 and R5, there's no standards whatsoever. There's not even a parking standard.
That's the whole objective of having it as a special exception use and not a permitted use.
Well, they're proposing it as a special exception use in the R3.
I understand that. But I'm saying I believe that they need additional controls in our zoning regulations to oversee these uses.
So what would you suggest?
There's a bunch. I'm not suggesting reinventing the wheel.
Okay.
There's a number of towns close and far that have very reasonable type of restrictions written into their zoning regulations for bed and breakfast. Some of the towns have done it another way. They've actually created an ordinance, a town ordinance to control it, which is, you know, a little bit more cumbersome and require action of their involvement. But I mean, that's another way to handle it. But the R3 zone, I'm sorry, R3 zone is our flagship single family residential zone. Most of the Hilltop in Derby is R3 zone, okay? And your proposal would open up all of those R3 properties to convert to bed and breakfast. And I don't think that the residents there would enjoy that, okay?
Well, in the
what else to tell you?
In the R4 and R5, which are large zones, I guess is it the intention that R4s and R5 are not people in the primary residences in Derby?
My position is I would do the same thing with an application that was in the R4 or R5 zone for a bed and breakfast as I'm doing here.
You wouldn't be able to.
Why not?
Because you haven't changed your regulations. If you have that great of a concern for your regulations, this condition, well, that doesn't mean there's no parking regulation.
Require the creation of it, Dominic, like we're asking you to do. I'm asking.
Not in the R4 and R5.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I can make two suggestions on mine to amend it. You can say that for a bed and breakfast in the R3 zone, the property has to be two times the minimum size of the lot and have parking in the rear.
I'm not agreeable to any change that we're going to make tonight. I'm saying we need to investigate this. The commission needs to investigate it. Our planner needs to investigate it. Our corporation council needs to investigate it to come up with a reasonable.
Okay, I just want to point out.
What he's trying to say is that he's open to negotiation. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm willing to sit down and talk, but I filed this application in November, and I got no report. No report back, no suggestion back, and nothing. What I tried to do is fill a hole for the bed and breakfast. I could have tailored this, and I'd be glad to tailor it to my client's property. My client has a very large piece of property. It is perfect for a bed and breakfast. It has the house's location where there is natural buffering, and it is.
We're working on the text, though. I don't mean to interrupt. We're working on the text, not a location.
I'm working on standards. So I'm saying I could have put standards in that limit it to a specific site, but that isn't appropriate zoning. That is a lot of that is taking away from the commission the ability. I tend to have a little more faith in commissions that to be able to effectuate the special exception regulations. But I'm willing to sit down and discuss what else needs to be in. In other words, what you're saying is I should have changed the regulations to address the R4 and R5 too.
You changed it in a way, you already changed it in a way with the parking.
I did that because you didn't have a parking regulation for.
We don't have a lot of things. Okay. The regulations about bed and breakfast. Yeah. That's what we're looking for.
I certainly more than willing for my client's purposes. If you,
I'm
going to sit down with, want me to sit down with Ryan. But if this were the case, the only thing I say on behalf of my client, who has waited patiently, is that this should have been something that was addressed to me at a point where we could have discussed it before the public hearing. Because certainly I'm willing to make any changes. I looked at it and made a change that I felt was appropriate that would have applied to the people in the R4 and R5 zone. You have a definition. This commission has had an abundance 26 years to change the definition if it didn't like it.
You're a fresh applicant.
Well, that's... All right, I don't...
Are there any other questions, Ryan?
The only thing, and I reviewed this with Vince, and we didn't have any specific comments relative to this because the text amendment in and of itself is a relatively simple amendment. The notion, the amendment that says bed and breakfast with a maximum of 3 guest rooms is redundant because that's what the definition says. So, but it wasn't something that was technically incorrect. So. We also took no exception to the proposed amendment to the parking standard. So really it's a discussion for the commission. That's ultimately your legislative decision to consider amendments. And we did get a report from NVCOG and they did not have any concerns about intermunicipal impacts. And we did not get a report from SCROG, but 35 days has passed since they were notified. So there's no need to wait for their response. So this is that we look at this as largely a discussion for the commission and the applicant.
I mean, if it's the commission that they want to continue the public hearing and have me sit down with your planner, but I'm an applicant.
I'm an applicant. I'm not the planner. And there seems to be, on the part of at least one of the commission members, Commissioner Kupchansky, a dissatisfaction with your regulations, that your regulations are ineffective. With respect to bed and breakfast, I just came in and filed the applications I did because you already have it as a permitted use in two of the zones.
Special exception use.
Special exception is a permitted use under the special exception. That's what I think Brian would agree. It is a permitted use. It's your administrative capacity, the discretion that you have in your regulation and in statute in 8-3. So that's what a special exception is. It's determined to be a permitted use with subject to the certain discretionary conditions in the statute. Okay, so seeing that you had it in two zones, I simply propose it in the third zone in exactly the same way you have it in the other two zones. And I proposed, when I checked the parking reg and didn't find one, I proposed one because I thought it is appropriate to have a parking reg, whether it's in the R1, R4, R5, or R3 zone. If your consideration is that you want some other restrictions within the definition.
It doesn't have to be within a definition. It could be an add-in on the special exception uses. We've done that before. Did that with the adult daycare. Okay.
Add in on the, yeah. Well, you'd have to.
You put a list, it could be a, could be an amendment almost anywhere in the regulations that describe what the conditions are of a bed and breakfast that goes above and beyond the definition.
If I may just interject, I mean, I think there's really two considerations for this board in evaluating the application. One is, do you, as a matter of policy and legislative decision, want to consider allowing bed and breakfast within the R3 zone as a starting point? And if you do, then I think the second question is, what, if any, additional regulations would you like to impose upon that use within that zone? And I think if the answer to the first question is that you do not even want to consider the use in the zone, then getting to the second point is probably just an exercise that you may want to consider because you currently have it in the, I think, in the 4 and 5 zoning right. districts, but that would not necessarily concern this applicant. It would be something that the planner and the commission could take up independently. But I think if you're going to answer no to the first question, then it's probably on moot to address the second section, at least within the context of this application.
I think those are great questions that have to be answered, Brian, but I would rather have this public hearing go on and hear the other comments of people in the audience answer those questions or concerns.
Oh, I agree.
We're getting there. Is there any other questions from the committee? Raymond? Okay. We're good.
Gino, I got one. I got a question.
Oh, go ahead, Al.
Now, I was just curious when it comes to this, like, how long can they stay at these bed and breakfasts? How long are the tenants allowed to stay? Are they permitted to stay at the bed and breakfasts? Is there a time frame? Is there just an, or is it open-ended? Can they keep on re-upping?
Under the current definition, there's no restriction on time frame.
Yeah. Okay, so we can, so theoretically, we can say it's a bed and breakfast and really lease out 3 bedrooms, correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
Say that again, Oni.
Well, yes, under the current regulation, there's no specific duration or limitation on the duration of the stay. I think, again, it is a special exception application, so this commission, when acting upon a special exception, you could impose conditions on the approval that could address duration and number of occupants and parking and those types of things that would affect public health and safety.
Limitation. That it, Oni? Are you still there?
All good. Yeah, I'm here. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Gotcha. Raymond, anything? Okay, if there's no other questions at this time for the commission, I'd like to open it up to the public. I'm sorry, ma'am? Is there anyone from the public that wish to speak on the public hearing for 9A on Zoom? If you're there, you could just unmute your mic, state your name and address for the record.
Hello, my name is Christiana Manchester. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, hello. My husband, Samuel Lewis, and I reside at 2 Homestead Ave. We're one of the closest neighbors, probably, to Johnny Hudson over there at 80 Stillmack. In regards to this application, we just wanted to voice our support. She's been a wonderful neighbor, very respectful, and we would assume that she would choose her guests as such, you know. We also have a lot of room in between properties. Not just from her property to ours, but all of the neighbors surrounding her property. So, you know, we would hope that it would bring more business to Derby and to our area. We're not really concerned about the safety. Like I said, we do have a child, an 8-year-old that attends Bradley School close to here. It is a pretty good neighborhood here. But like I said, I think that Johnny would choose her guests accordingly. She's been a very respectful, quiet neighbor, and it's a beautiful property. It's a beautiful home. And I really think it would be a good use for a bed and breakfast because, I mean, it's a brand new home. It's beautiful. So I know it's not common for Derby for anybody to come here to stay at a bed and breakfast, but this could possibly be the beginning of something. So we just wanted to voice our support. Again, my name's Christiana Manchester. My husband and I own the home here at 2 Homestead, and we live right directly behind her or in front of her, whichever way you'd want to put it. But that was all we had to say. Thank you.
Ms. Manchester, what was your husband's first name?
Samuel Lewis.
Samuel. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, of course.
Anyone else from the public wish to speak on 9A? Yep, you could just come up to the mic, ma'am, and just hit the button in the center, and a green light will go on and.
Okay. My name is Kathy Ducharme. I live at 6 Shelton Street in Derby. I grew up at 8 Shelton Street. I've lived in Derby in this neighborhood for 63 years. The neighborhood is basically the same as it always has been. Not a lot of changes. It's a small neighborhood. It comes right up off of Route 34. Mostly, well, it's a mixed group of families now. It used to be a lot of young families. Now it's kind of mixed with the seniors and the young families. I grew up in playing in the area that Johnny's house is in. My next door neighbor was my best friend, the Stelmacs, which the name of the road is Stelmac Road. So I grew up over there. And my kids grew up there. My kids went to school in Derby schools. And I really want to voice my opinion. I'm not sure who it was on the board here that stated a business use in our neighborhood, but that's basically what you're starting to propose. And this has always been a small family, very tight-knit neighborhood, neighbor to neighbor. My neighbors are here with me. We all walk the neighborhood. We all are out and about. The neighbors know each other. There's more families per more cars per house now, so there's a lot of cars parked on the streets. The streets are narrow. It was never built for as many cars, so it's often hard to navigate just walking with our dogs in the neighborhood. Occasionally, more times than not, Route 34 gets backed up a certain time of day. And a lot of people that are in a rush are trying to come up off of 34 and make the shortcut through the neighborhood. Any excess traffic up there is really difficult to navigate when you're out with your kids, when you're out with your dogs, when you're just walking. I'm concerned about excess traffic, people coming out of nowhere just coming up there. I'm concerned about just the changes of opening up this can of worms, if you will, for businesses coming into the neighborhood. I don't believe Johnny's been there maybe 5 or 6 years, as is the same with the person that called in. And they're all lovely people. I don't know that they know the neighborhood as well as some of the other neighbors do. So I'm here to plead with you to not change the demographics of this neighborhood. Stelmac Road, yes, is a dead end street. It was a family's road that they had a garden up there. There was only one house on Stelmac Road, which I believe is one Stelmac Road. And then there was a second one. But it's just, I don't know if any of you have driven up there. Are you guys familiar with the area? Because the
Yes.
city now owns a part of that, I believe. It was turned over for taxes.
So just for the record, Mr. Shard, that in front of us right now is an application for a zone text change. And sometimes people, it's hard and it's happened plenty of times, but people think that this is to change the zone text in that zone.
What specifically does that mean? Zone text change, changing the wording in the
So
So
what it would do is it would make all the properties eligible for bed and breakfast
correct.
Okay.
beyond the one that's the next application.
So it's
So
the
this is
two.
approved already.
No, 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 no.
You're in. What
Okay.
you're doing is changing the text so that every piece of property within your residential district would qualify for a bed and breakfast. And an application could be submitted, provided they meet the standards.
Yeah.
So
For a special exemption.
everyone that lives there can just turn their house over to a rental
Why not
property,
give them
No.
more?
No.
So that the procedure would be, if this text amendment is approved, the commission would then consider the specifics of Ms. Hudson's application for a
Application.
special exception. So
So everyone would have
that,
to come before you
yes,
if they wanted to.
yes. And the way the regulation is written today, anyone in the R3 who would be eligible would have to make a special exception application to this commission, which would require a public hearing, notification of neighbors within a certain distance of their property, and a public hearing in front of this commission. So
what I'm trying to say, and to so that you could acknowledge it, it's not for Mrs. Hudson.
Okay.
This is to change the text in the zone.
But she's the first one who's come to ask for this.
If it changes.
Okay.
If so, it changes. All right. We've had this, you know, in other projects as well. And people get confused and they think that this project is connected to the zone text change, and it's not. So I just want to make sure that everyone...
You could approve the zone text change, but not approve the project.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Right. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands.
At this point, us as commissioners, we're not looking at one individual.
Correct.
Problem.
Okay.
We're saying, what is the effect of this text change going to be on the entire zoning district?
Okay.
Okay, so we've got to go beyond the one property and consider the benefits, pros and cons, and how it fits in our regulations in terms of the entire district and not just the one.
Okay. Well, I hope that neighbors that come out and discuss this will help you with the text change problem also. So can I just ask this? If you do say, yes, we're going to approve the text change, then Johnny has to come back and reapply.
No, we have an application pending that too. Okay. So there's two things tonight.
Okay.
We're on 9A.
Okay.
9A is the text change for all the R3 zones.
All right. And 9B is her. So we have to get up again for 9B.
You'll be allowed to if you wish.
All right.
You could probably just say, echo my comments.
Could I just tell everybody here that that's like, I want you to refile that when you, okay. All right. Yeah. My basic concern really is the change of the neighborhood. And honestly, I think Derby struggles getting people to want to move in for many different reasons. But if you start opening it up and make the small little neighborhoods that are very few now, able to become like a business kind of property, you're also going to be closing that sector of people that want to come in with kids and that type of thing. So thank you for listening. Thank you for addressing what I didn't.
Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to speak? I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead. Just come right up, ma'am.
Never got called ma'am before.
I apologize.
That's okay.
My name is Joanne.
You've got to hit it again. It's got to be green. Sorry. Hit it one more time.
There you go.
My name is Joanne Nero. I've lived at 10 Homestead Avenue for 48 years. I've seen people come and go. It's a very, very friendly neighborhood. And what I don't understand is you're talking about changing an R3 zone and making it so that businesses can just pop up in every neighborhood in the east side of Derby, or all of Derby for that fact. I just feel that there should be more, I don't know, I'm not happy with the whole situation, and I don't feel that this should be changed, and that's how I feel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. My name is Kelly DiCenzo, 29 Homestead Avenue for 36 years. Like the other ladies have said, the neighborhood is quiet, peaceful. There's new families on the street with little kids, and I don't believe that this is going to help neighborhoods any, whether it's our neighborhood or other neighborhoods, especially on like where we are. If you're going to have businesses popping up where we're used to having just people who own their own home, take care of it, and do their own thing, and it's not a business. It's a home, and it makes a neighborhood. So I would like to say that I'm against it, and I could have had other people here tonight, but they couldn't make it, and they feel the same way. I know all my neighbors' names. I see them all the time, and they're just kind of like, can't understand why you would want to do this. So that's just how I feel. Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to speak on 9A? Could unmute your mic? No?
Yes, good evening. Karen Chemises, 25 John Street.
Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been listening to everybody's comments, and they were very, very clear and on mark with how I feel. Ms. Nero and Mr. DeCenzo both spoke to the fact that we do not want businesses in our residential neighborhoods. I mean, I'm on John Street, and I can't even get out of my road because of the business that's across the street that is with the big Y and Dollar Tree and all of those other things coming in. The zones are supposed to be residential. Let's leave them that. You know, we're talking tonight about this specific Ms. Hudson, and we can't think that way. We have to think of the neighborhood in general, because she's not going to live there forever. She's going to sell the house, and the next person will still have the privileges that she is seeking tonight. And I don't think anybody wants that privilege in their neighborhood. Thank you.
Is there, thank you, Karen. Is there anybody else on Zoom that wishes to speak for 9A, the public hearing?
Hi, Sarah Wadomsky, 95 Academy Hill Road, member of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen. I would just like to echo the previous speakers and speak against the zone text change in the R3 zone. Maybe it's more appropriate in the R4 and 5 zones, but not in the R3 zone. And I hope the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission follow that and what the members of the public have spoken up about tonight. If the members of the commission do plan to move forward or continue to look at it, it's not something that should be rushed into. There should be proper definitions to regulate this type of activity that there don't seem to be right now. And there should be a thorough analysis of this and what the impact would be in our neighborhoods. But again, first and foremost, I would speak against the zone text change in the R3 zone. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to speak on 9A that's online there? Go ahead, Paul.
The only thing I was going to say is we received a letter from Stephanie and Joe Milano.
Yeah, I was just going to put it.
Okay.
It's okay. I'm not going to read it. It's already in it. I'm just going to state the name that you want to do it, Joe? I mean, So just to piggyback off of what Paul said, we received a letter from Stephanie and Joe Solano, 414 New Haven Avenue. They wrote formally to express their opposition of the proposed special exemption application for bread and breakfast at 80 Style Mac. And I'm presenting that into the record.
They specifically spoke about the special exception application. So I just think, that it should be restated perhaps at the 9B as well.
So what?
Their email spoke specifically about the special exception application.
Right.
So this should be part of the record for 9B as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll put it in there for 9A and B. Okay. Any other questions from the commission?
Can I respond?
Sure. Absolutely. One more time. There you go.
I think there's a couple of misconceptions of the public. You are not all of a sudden in this zoning regulations putting commercial or business uses into a residential zone. And that is in the R3 zone, you could have a professional offices. Those are businesses. Those are accessory uses that are
not under special exception. And there are special uses, and they can be, you can have it. There are restrictions in the regulations. You can have a nursery. You can have a public place of worship. If somebody had a large enough property, that's a special exception. School, library. This is an interesting one. Public utility building without repair facilities or outside storage yards. For those as old as me, they remember these public utility buildings that would pop up that didn't have, they were, whatever they were, exchanges, houses, I don't know what they did, but they were in residential zones. And by the way, I do want to say one thing, and I don't want to get too offended by this, but I grew up in the R5 zone. And I think there's a little bit of disrespect to those of us who grew up in the R5 and R4 zones, which are mainly on the west side of town. And so I just wanted to point that out, you know, where you can have B&Bs. Public and private, semi-public building, you can have a convalescent home, not that anybody's building them anymore. You can have a child daycare center. These are all in the R3 zone. So if you have a large enough property, let's say acre, acre and a half property in the R3 zone, you could have a daycare center limited by the regulations of the state and whatever that, but you can. That's in the special exceptions, not a change. In addition to that, as far as restricting the number of occupants, I hope everybody understands that one zone, not the R3, R1, R2, R4, or R5, restricts a house to owner-occupied. However, if you have a B&B, a bed and breakfast, you are required to be owner-occupied. So you can the neighborhoods of the people that live in, somebody who simply owns the house and rents it out to a family with 15 people. Wouldn't make any difference whatsoever. You could have grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, child, child, cousin, cousin, all in the same house. It's permitted as of right in the R1, R2, R5 zone. So I think there's a misconception of what are we in our neighborhood. We're talking about a zone text change. This commission has already made the determination that it's really appropriate to have a bed and breakfast, which requires owner occupancy, and limits it to 3 rooms in the R4 and R5, which are residential zones. Some of them single family, some of them dominated by multifamily, and many of the multifamilies are made by very poor zoning regulations, including some of these were made pre-existing legal non-conforming properties when they shouldn't have, and is a great contribution to our housing shortage, by the way. And the public understands that the regulations don't purify the zone of residential owner and owner occupied. They don't. So what I did is put a use in that if you had the use in your zone, you would have a requirement that the house had to be owner occupied and that it would be limited to 3 bedrooms because that is part of the definition. The idea of putting standards in, standards are something that you can impose in the special exception. In my opinion, with all due respect to Commissioner Kopchanski's interpretation that the regulations themselves are deficient as they exist right now because they allow it in the R4 and R5, the fact of the matter is there's nothing to prevent this commission from imposing the standards during the anybody who comes before the commission with a special exception. Based on the location of that special exception and the considerations of the property. But I do want to point out, because I think it is, and by the way, we experienced wholeheartedly what happens, and I just want the public to understand this. If you come in for a zone change on behalf of someone, a text change, and you don't come in with a plan, the public gets angry because they're told you can't talk about that property. So in order to alleviate it, what's being done, and I've done it, I did it in Chelton, I did it in Newtown, I did it, is where clients are prepared to spend the money to do the application for the plan on the site so that the public has the benefit of not only seeing the proposed text change, but seeing the plan. That's what I did. And of course, the comments are on the plan, and but everybody was discussing it except for one person. Me. Nobody discussed the site. Nobody discussed I haven't discussed the site, the precautions, and everything under the special exception regulation. But with respect to the application that you've opened the public hearing for, I want everybody to understand in the R3 zone, there are an abundance already of non-residential uses that are in the regulations, number one. And number two, there is nothing to eliminate to prevent a neighborhood in the R3 zone on Stelmack, on Shelton, on any one of those streets, on Homestead, from somebody from buying two or three houses and having 10 people in each house and renting it to them. There's no restriction. In the B&B, it would have to be owner-occupied. So answer any questions that the commissioners have on the text change.
Thank you, Dominic.
I have a question. Dominic, have you observed the special exceptions that are allowed in the R3 zone and what's in common with every one of those special exception uses? There's a commonality among them. All of those uses are there to serve the neighborhood, a church, a school, a library, a home occupation, convalescent home. Those are all things that go hand in hand with a residential use mm-hmm. of that nature. That's why I think that they're there. I don't think a bed and breakfast.
All right. I mean, a public utility building without repair facilities, I don't think that serves the neighborhood. But, if you're in your neighborhood and you're having the 50th wedding anniversary party, and you need three of the, why do those cousins have to come? You know what I mean? And you don't want them staying in your house. Guess what? If they're in a B&B, they could stay right down the road and not be in your house all the time. So a B&B can serve the neighborhood just as well as a ton of vacancies.
Thank you. All right, go ahead, Ryan. You got anything? No. All right. If there's no other comments,
Mark Garfalon, town clerk. I just want to reiterate the point when we're talking about this zone text change, because we're going to all over the lot here. This is about a zone text change that would affect R3, not R3 Homestead Avenue and Stelmack Road. Okay. It's R3 in all of the 5.3 square miles of the city. And from a public policy standpoint, if this commission is going to deliberate and try to come up with something, if it's their choice to make that change, this is not the way to do it. This is a complicated matter. And when the when those zoning regulations were put in 26 years ago, bed and breakfast or Airbnb or whatever you want to call it at the time was like an afterthought. It wasn't like a ton of thought and discussion went into that. So if we're going to endeavor down that road, if you even want to do it in the first place, that should be something that is generated from the city after look, you know, from the commission, the city. And so it's not to, get specific to, you know, pit neighbors against neighbors. This is about looking at the whole of it with analysis and evaluation of what works and what doesn't work in other towns. Because you go down a path here and based on this, which it's hard to not look at it. Everybody's looking at it as it relates to the thing that comes after it, right? But that's not really the way to look at it. It should be looked at to say, what is the best policy, and to put it in that way. Right. So I would just urge caution, action on this, and when it should really be coming from the city, if that's something we should endeavor. And to the point, there should be an answer to these things, or a comment on these, so that there is a dialogue on it. So thank you.
Thank you, Gina, town clerk.
We've got a question more for, I guess, Brian and Ryan, but Dominic may want to comment on it. If the zone text change is approved, and then this commission decides they want to revise the definition to include a lot of the items David said, is being approved in other towns, and that happens after an approval of any bed and breakfast in an R3 zone, do those regulations then apply to
applications pending? So the application's pending. So if the commission would consider perhaps something more restrictive compared to what the applicants presented in terms of the text amendment, I think that can be incorporated and considered as part of the normal application process for the text amendment. And if the suggestion would be to make it less restrictive than what the applicants presented, I would argue that it should go back to the NVCOG and SCROG for their review and comment. But if the intent would make it less restrictive, more restrictive, excuse me, Dave, thank you, more restrictive than what's been proposed, I think that can work within the context of the, like I said, the application process. And then the special exception application would be considered under that revised text.
Even though my client has waited a while for this, anytime you have a text change application, the commission has three choices: approve, deny, or modify. And so what the interesting thing is that none of the notices that go out to the neighborhood are related to this application, because there are no notices related to a text change application. However, because my client, I think this would be a good use for her property, but we're not going to get to it unless the text change. Certainly the public hearing can be kept open and there could be discussion between myself and staff. But I want to point something out. I mean, and with all due respect, it's nice to say that the commission should be doing it, and that's correct, but the commission didn't. And most text changes are generated in this state, and I'm sure Ryan would agree, by an applicant coming forward and saying there are certain times when commissions have subcommittees to address text changes. But most text changes, if Mrs. Hudson wasn't here, you wouldn't be considering B&Bs. I'll tell you what would happen. You would have a lot, not a lot. You would have them throughout the town operating illegally. And believe me, I've operated not in the general term, but in this town. But there was an individual who came to me, and he operated what might be considered a B&B. What he was doing, he was housing traveling nurses in one of our nice, large, early 20th century Queen Anne Victorians that you can divide up to, having grown up in one, many rooms as you want. And he was just doing that. And it was in another town. So it wasn't in, not Derby. I'm going to dissociate that.
You think it doesn't happen in Derby? With nurses?
I go on 30th Street. I could look around and look at the other houses that I grew up around. But in an effort to try to, I think this is not that difficult a thing to salvage. I think it is an appropriate use given that you've already made that decision. The public hearing can be kept open and we can discuss it. Now, the next question gets to be, there's a second public hearing in which everybody's been commenting on. If you want to open that and at least discuss it, at least give the public that are here, because there isn't the requirement that you renotice the continuation of the public hearing, although if people are told, you know what I mean? But I didn't know whether you wanted to do that so that we could go over anything with respect to the site. If you don't want to do that, my point is to get the client hopefully to the finish line so you can take the public hearing, keep it open, and instruct your staff, because I can't discuss it with the commission, to discuss with me what any suggested changes or tweaks there could be to the existing regulation.
Dominic, you're asking to continue the public hearing on the text change application, open the public hearing on the special exception application, and also continue that till next month.
Well, you have to, because we've already noticed it.
Yes.
Yeah. And you want to open it without a presentation. Certainly, the members of the public are welcome to grab the extra packets that are up there. There are packets of the regulation, and they can come up and take it home with them, but they don't have to do it.
It's up to Trevor. Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
My feeling is this, is I think we should close the public hearing and make a decision on this tonight. We can always go forward if people want to change the regulations or whatever, but unless there's someone else that wants to submit any new evidence or hasn't spoken before, I'd like to close the public hearing and decide on it tonight. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Is that in a form of a motion on 9A?
Anybody else wants to speak?
Oh. Anybody else? I don't think so. We'll is there anybody else from the public that wishes to speak before make a motion to close the public hearing? Anybody else from the public? Anybody else from the public? With nobody saying so, Paul?
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
Raymond, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. Close. Yep. We'll move on to 9B. And can I have a motion to open up the public hearing on 9B?
Maybe, John? I hate to go out of order, but if we make a decision on the text, we may not have to go forward on the other application.
We still got to open it, though.
Right?
Well, I would open the public hearing.
And continue.
Dominic, would you agree to continue it to next month?
It would appear that the commission members are determined to deny this. I hate to say it, at least that's what it appears to me. So if they're going to deny the text change, why would we waste the time of everybody? Go forward with the special exception. I offered the opportunity to, as you can, to modify something in accordance with the requirements, but that's been rejected. So
I'm
okay. So we're
going to make a motion to reorder.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Raymond.
I'd like to make a motion to table 9B at this time.
You can't table it. It's going to go ahead and make a motion to reorder it, and we'll
go to reorder or whatever term you want to use. Move on to 10A.
Okay.
And if 10A has a positive outcome for the client, then we can revert back to 9.
Okay.
To open that public hearing.
All right.
And that's continue.
In the form of a motion. Do I have a second?
I want to make sure.
But public hearing is closed on the matter, really.
We have a short. Many members. Or you have one
item. Yeah, Oni's online.
Because any text change, any map change requires the majority of the entire commission, not the members here.
Right.
So I understand that it would require, you have 6 members, it would require 5 votes passed, and I understand that. I would prefer to have a whole commission, but
make your choice. Okay. Do I have a second? There's a motion to move to 10A.
I'll second.
Joe second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? All right. Motion carries. All right. So 10A will fall underneath new business. Johnny Hudson, 80 Stelmack Road, zone text change amendment. Proposed zone text change 195.11 residential R3 zone, subsection D 195.54. Parking spaces numbered in locations lined for bed and breakfast. Discussion of possible action.
I'll start discussion.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Okay, I'll start this discussion on it. I agree with Attorney Thomas in his submitting both applications, that if he didn't submit the second application, the question would be you're hiding something. And you know, and the problem is the process is such that residents out there that aren't familiar with it don't understand it. It's their first time being experienced. I was also a little bit surprised when I saw in our own regulations that a bed and breakfast is permitted in two other districts. And then the next question that I had was, is anyone aware of any applications that ever came through? And so far, nobody's aware of any previous applications in those two districts with regard to the bed and breakfast. I also agree with Dave's comments about the majority of special exemptions, exemptions in the R3 district that support that district. Their uses like places of worship, schools, libraries, public utility building, convalescent home, maybe a child daycare center. These are all uses that support a residential use in that district. But then the thing that, you know, I also considered is what is the benefit to the town of Derby? Didn't hear one thing that was said that would benefit the town of Derby. What would benefit Derby to have this use in place? I couldn't think of one. Normally, when this type of legislation is approved in municipalities or cities or towns, it supports a tourist use or revolves around one other focus that attracts people to the area. That's not the case here. And I also ask myself, we're all residents on this board that live in the city of Derby. How would you like to wake up every weekend and find different people next door? Now, many cases, I'm sure they're nice people, but especially in the cases of some other towns that have been finding that, you know, sometimes things get a little noisy. Parking is an issue. Traffic is an issue. And so those are considerations that I think that I don't want to see in that residential district. Again, I don't want to wake up every weekend and find different people next to me. Now, I'm sure the property owner is a very nice lady. People spoke highly of her. But unfortunately, that's not what we're considering. We're considering this use on every property that has a parking space or those conditions within the residential district. So it's not about you personally. It's about the use and how it affects the people and the residents in that district. And we've got to really, really focus on our residential districts, preserve them and foster them and make sure we maintain that quality of life. And again, there's no benefit that I see with this. And in my opinion, I'm against it.
Any other comments from?
I just have one more, and we didn't touch on that tonight either. And mentioned early how the R3 zone is really the largest single-family residential zone in Derby. By converting buildings, single-family houses, into bed and breakfasts, okay, number one, it becomes a business use. But I think even more importantly, it takes that single-family house off the market to another family that might want to raise their family in Derby. We have an excruciating shortage of single family housing in Derby right now. Okay. You don't need to convert a single family house into a business in order to get it filled. Single family houses in the R3 zone last about one day on the market before multiple offers are made on it. And this is another reason why I think allowing the conversion of these houses in the R3 zone into business use is not to the benefit of the city. Okay, it might be the benefit of the owner, but not to the benefit of the city. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Anybody else? Raymond?
I'd like to echo those thoughts. And Paul, you had a lot of good ones there. And being that we already allow this in other zones, I see no need for it whatsoever. And like you said, Paul, nothing personal, but that'll be three. If we approve this, that'll be three out of four out of the five zones, residential zones in town. And there isn't that much R1 and R2 properties in town. So that being said, I'd like to make a motion to approve this as presented. And call for a roll call vote.
Approve the text change consultation?
Yes.
Can I add something first?
Hold on.
Well, there's the application. There's an application for a text change amendment.
Right. Right.
And it's a motion to approve the text change as presented?
Yes. And we'll take a vote. We got to make a motion to the positive, correct?
No, if you want
all
to
right,
deny, then, you can make a motion to deny.
All right, make a motion to deny if it's okay with Corporation Council.
Yeah.
Okay, Raymond, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Paul?
Could you just state the motion clearly for the record, so because it was not, I don't know.
Go ahead, Raymond.
Brian stated it, but I don't think.
In regards to 10A,
mm-hmm.
for the text change amendment, make a motion to deny.
And it was seconded by Paul. All in favor?
And that was for the reasons that were stated on the record.
Yes, and I echoed all those reasons.
And any discussion?
Any discussion on that, Joe?
I was just going to add, well, looks like we're denying it. Moving forward, I think we might talk about it a little more in 11C2, but I think this commission needs to be a little more proactive on figuring out some deficiencies in the town, because it's unfortunate that this has come up just because an application has been brought forward. So I think we're going to talk about budgets and looking into things later, but items like this should really be looked into, because you know, part of the argument here is that there are 10 other non-residential special exception uses in there that, you know, I know there's arguments against it, but I think you try to look at the flip side, there's arguments for it too as well that kind of makes it look like it fit. And so just to not waste people's time moving forward, you know, try to figure out what we want in there, because that has been, you know, as it's been brought up, it's been in there a while, nobody noticed it, and just like to try to avoid this moving forward.
I agree. I think the board has taken great strides, especially with the subcommittee, to streamline the process and amongst other things. And I think we have a good board here that is bringing us into the 21st century, but we'll discuss it more under 9C. I agree. With the motion on the floor, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion carries.
Did you want a roll call vote on that?
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's more involved. The clerk call the roll?
Mr. DiGiovanni.
Yes.
Mr. Denise.
Yes.
Mr. Kupchinski.
Aye.
Is that yes or no?
It's a yes.
It's I. Oh, okay. Mr. Malerba?
Yes.
Mr. Sadlick?
Yes.
Mr. Soika?
Yes.
7 yes.
Unanimous.
0 no.
All right.
6.
6.
Six, yes, sorry.
Yes.
All right, so now we'll go back to 9B with no action. I don't need it.
Mr. Thomas, Attorney Thomas, are you going to withdraw your special exception application under the circumstances?
No. Whoever we want.
Okay, well, we'll open the poll. Okay. Okay, we'll open the public hearing. Open the public hearing on 9B.
Okay, so we'll go back to 9B. Motion to open 9B. Joe?
Motion to open.
Second? Paul? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right.
Does anybody here speak on it?
Does anybody wish to speak on 9B, either in person or on Zoom? Anybody from the public wish to speak on 9B? Anyone from the public wish to speak on 9B? No one's here to speak on 9B. Can I have a motion to close the public hearing?
Mr. Chairman, this is just, that's like a point of order. Technically, it doesn't even exist. I mean, it's on our agenda.
No, it's
on.
It's noticed.
It's noticed. Yeah. That's correct, but how could we act on something that's not in our regulations?
Public hearing, and then you're going correct. To take action on 10B to deny it based upon the fact it doesn't comply with your regulations.
That's it. Do I have a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close the public hearing.
Second?
Second.
David, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, public hearing is now closed. We'll move on to 9B. 10B. Or 10B, excuse me. Johnny Hudson special exemption application, 80 Stelmack Road for bed and breakfast, discussion and possible action.
There a motion to on that application?
I'll make a motion to deny the application and it's not a permitted use or a special exception.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Joe, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
And the application is denied.
And the application is denied. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll move on to 11A. 11, old business. 11A. 4U LLC, 3 Francis Street, site plan application to be used for storage of materials in office space. Discussion and possible action.
Gentlemen.
Hello. My name is Oleg Walenchuk. I'm the co-owner of 4U LLC. And just wanted to give you an update. We have updated site, sorry for repeating the words, updated site plan done by a surveyor, which did original survey to the town for that property. So also, we would like to fix and remodel the property so we can use it as it was used before. As a storage and a garage. Besides that, maybe you would like to add some.
Basically, the storage and the office space where.
Your name, sir?
Vlad Oblažej, co-owner of 4U LLC. It's just two of us in the company, the construction company. So the use of the building for us is office space and mostly the storage of the materials as it was used before. For the bottle, Thompson, I don't know. We found a lot of bottles there. But the main idea was the building was in a really bad shape when we purchased it from the town of Derby. And to be honest with you, we went to get a permit from a building department and we ended up over here 2 months ago. Don't know, still we don't know why. But we want to restore the building and use it. But right now with the weather and stuff like that, it's kind of tough. We were hoping to actually put a roof before the winter.
Okay. Does the commission have any questions?
Yeah. What's the status?
What's the status with your building permit? Has the building inspector let you is it still cease and desist in effect?
So right now it's basically they are waiting for the response from you guys, from a commission, and they cannot proceed further till we approve
it. It is pending. at this point.
And you've submitted plans to the building department and the zoning enforcement officer?
Yes.
And what, do they have any comments on those plans? What? Kevin's on. Kevin?
Yeah, Dave.
Do you have any comments on the plans for the gentleman?
This is basically the same, this is the same use that was there before.
Okay.
We told them to proceed. They went to get the demo permit, and they got a cease and desist.
Right. And are the building plans contemplating any expansion of the building, or is it all totally within the building?
Same footprint.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joe.
Just want to clarify, same as last time, these are just building improvements. A survey was given, but there's no site plan improvements proposed. It does, I don't know if you saw the survey, Dave, but it does look like there's only 11 feet between the building and the property line.
I know the building very well. It's tiny on the left.
But the parking is proposed in the front.
There's probably some encroachments there also.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we said, we have updated site plan with showing where we can park.
Well, it's a pre-existing non-conforming use.
Yeah.
So the building and pre-existing non-conforming structure probably as well.
Yeah.
So it's really just a determination as to whether you think your proposed use is consistent with the historic uses.
And we did ask Lisa at the building office to review the file to see if there's been any paperwork that suggests that there's an intent to make this more conforming. And the only permit that's been sought in the recent past was an electrical permit to put in some meters, but no intent to, nothing about what use that was intended for, what the purpose was. So there's been no obvious apparent intent by any this owner or previous owners to change it to a more conforming use.
If I remember correctly, wasn't that electrical permit for 6 meters?
It was, but there was no
contemplated an expansion.
Well, there was no use tied to that. It was just to put meters in.
Yeah.
So there's no statement that accompanied that, Dave.
I don't think it made it that far.
Are they lied? The 6 meters?
No, there's no meters in them. The last time I was there. Any other discussion, Raymond?
Yeah, I just had a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
And I'm not trying to be a Karen. And this process has dragged on. And on top of that, they purchased the property from the city of Derby. It would have been nice if there was communication that told you, I don't know how it transpired that you started work without a permit. But you should have known that you needed a permit. So, you know, ultimately this is on you. But, you know, I look at the site plan and I've been to the street. There are some yellow markings on the street. I don't know who put them there. I'm assuming the city, maybe.
There was the fire department going back. It's in the file there. There was a reason the fire trucks couldn't get down the street. So
yeah,
there was
and the fire marshal marked in red a fire lane to stay in front of your building. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about 20 feet away from the building.
Okay, so then you're going to park your cars in front of that. Is that correct?
Yes. For in our property, like 11 feet away from the building.
Okay. The other issue, and I'll let it go this time, but again, you've got a site plan that's with no live seal that was drawn up in 2018. How many times are we sitting here looking at a site plan that's more than 4 or 5 years old that
we have current one, which was updated in December last year.
A site plan?
Yes.
Okay. Right. You have a copy of that?
Yeah. He brought it here, yeah.
November 25.
Okay. All right. Because the one I saw electronically today.
That was an older. That was
okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see the name. Okay. Well, that resolves that. I'm all set.
Okay. And, sir, just the fact about the permit. We got the emergency repair permit from Mayor wasn't in the office when we basically came to the building department. I went to somebody upstairs. I believe it's Paul. Was yeah. Okay.
Because the narrative is going to get all the spotting. That's going to get us. That's a cloudy inspection. Let the winter set in and keep going.
Any other discussion?
Kevin, do you need anything else from this board?
No, they're good with me. They're good with me.
Okay.
Do I have a motion? Go ahead, Joe.
Motion to approve the application.
I'll second.
David?
Yeah.
Should before you vote, could the motion be something catered more towards that the use in the building are existing nonconforming? This is a continuation of prior nonconforming uses.
Is that your finding, Joe? Is that your motion?
Yes.
David, you'll second that?
Yeah.
And then we could get a letter, Ryan, yeah, and then we'll draft the letter. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. We'll get a letter drafted by Lisa. I'll sign it, and then you guys will be able to move forward and go to the building department and get your permits.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to 11B. D Basin Incorporated Lanzieri Court discussion. Go ahead, Ryan.
So in 2021, this commission, along with the prior administration, mayor's office, requested that my firm review various stormwater ponds in the city for ongoing maintenance concerns or possible defects in the stormwater structures, one of which was Deep Basin Inc. at Lanzieri Court. And this basin is in private owned privately by Detention Basin LLC, I believe. And they're responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of this pond. Specifically, when we look at detention basins, we're looking at a few characteristics of the pond to make sure that the integrity of the pond is intact. Most critically, that the outlet control structure, which is the structure that holds back the water, is unobstructed and in good condition. Two, we look at the berm itself, the constructed berm that holds back the water, that it's not damaged or there's no obvious animal burrows or other penetrations that might compromise the ability for that berm to hold back stormwater. And three, we look at the quality of the pond itself to see if there's excessive amounts of sediment, if there's excessive amounts of trash, large overgrown vegetation, and things of that nature. And in the case of this pond in 2021, we took a look at it and we found that the berm is well maintained. It's mowed regularly. The basin itself, the bottom of the basin, has some overgrown vegetation, although it wasn't oppressive, I would say, compared to some of the other ponds we looked at. But one thing that was of note is that the accumulation of sediment, road sand within the pond itself primarily, does need to be removed. It doesn't sort of match its original intent when you lose a portion of the volume associated with the pond itself. So we recommended that the vegetation within the basin itself and the accumulated sediment be removed. And we're also aware of the complaints that we've received from the city and from the neighbors that it doesn't hold water. So we looked at the outlet control structure itself in comparison to its original design approval that in 1994 widened the bottom opening of the structure. We found that the structure is substantially in conformance with that approved design. There was a little notch, a little V-notch is what we call it, a couple chunks of concrete, for lack of a better term, that have been cut out of the bottom of the opening. That is a little bit different than how it was originally approved. We did run some hydraulic models to see how that V-notch affected the function of the basin and actually found that it helped a little bit. So it wasn't something that we saw as a major defect, although it is somewhat different from what was approved in 1994. But we also did look at possibilities to modify the outlet structure so that it would function a little bit better on lower storm events and hold back more water without compromising the structure itself and increasing flows during storms up to the 100-year storm. So we did have some suggestions. Now, those suggestions about how to modify the outlet structure are not something that I think we can compel the owner to do, because largely it's in conformance with the way it was approved. However, I do feel that if these modifications, these suggestions that we have are incorporated, the basement may function a little bit better, certainly during smaller 2-year, 10-year storm events, which correlate roughly to 5 inches of rain. So it's a significant storm event, not 100-year, which may be as much as 8 inches of rain or more. But it would certainly help during smaller, more nuisance flooding events. But I'd say, in my opinion, reviewing that pond 5 years ago, I presume nothing's been done since then, is that removal of accumulated sediment would certainly certainly help the function of that pond. Beyond that, our suggestions on the modification of the outlet structure would be that to be taken up in the form of an application to this commission and to the Inland Wetlands Commission, and also possibly to the state Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Okay. So the owner of the D Basin LLC was given a copy of our report. They were on site during my inspection. I believe Sarah Carey, who was the zoning enforcement officer at the time, sent copies to all the detention basins that we reviewed. I don't know if there was much follow-up after she sent that out, because I believe that was right around the time that she left the city. So I would imagine that the situation is no better. That would be my presumption, because I've seen nothing in the record to suggest that anything was done. That's all I have for the moment.
Go ahead, David.
I have a couple questions, because this has been an ongoing problem for about the last 30 years with this basin, okay? I was one of the suckers who was paying into that. I lived on Franklin Avenue at the time. Nothing's been done. In the mid-90s, by the way, this basin was installed sometime in the mid to late 80s, okay?
Right.
But in the mid-90s, the subdivision called Cornfield,
yes,
across David Humphreys Road, was allowed to tie in their drainage into this basin. And I know that there was hydraulic studies done.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, Mike Joyce was involved, and his predecessor, too, was involved in that. And it was quite specific, you know, flow rates and discharge rates, and, you know, based on different type of storm conditions. So there was a lot of engineering that was involved in calculating how much this basin could safely hold,
mm-hmm,
and what kind of modifications would have to be done to it. I don't know if there was any follow-up on that to see if those improvements were actually done. And if you still have the calculations,
I do,
on that, okay. And if they, you know, if they match to what is there, because this thing,
if you
complaints.
If you read my report,
I
did look at the 1994 drainage calculations,
yeah,
and the modifications to the outlet structure that were approved at the time, and I found that what is there today largely, mm-hmm, mimics that approval. However, there is I did note where there's a little cut of concrete at the bottom of the rectangular notch.
I don't know if you noted also, there's another subdivision that drains into this.
More than one,
okay? Off of Strang Road, off of Ginetti Drive, okay? And yeah, that's the same waterway.
That drains into the water course behind the basin. It doesn't drain to the drainage system that contributes to the basin. That's on the other side. That's on the other side of the stream. That.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
May I address Ryan?
Good.
So what are you saying, Ryan?
They got to clean it out.
All right. So who takes care of cleaning it out? Who's responsible?
Detention Basin LLC.
All right. Turn it over to Corporation Council. Get them to clean it out. End of story. Make a motion. I'll make a motion to that.
Now you're talking. Thank you, Raymond.
Talk.
Well, I should just note too that each of the property owners that pay into this homeowners association would have a legal standing to pursue a remedy against the operator or owner, because there are certain legal private legal rights that they would have as members of the association, and the right to drain. I haven't seen all the
yeah
documents.
Let me respond to that, Brian. The property owners that are negatively affected by this basin are not the owners who pay into the maintenance of it. The owners that pay into the maintenance of it are upstream. Okay, they're not affected by overflowing or flooding or backing up. It's the people downstream that get flooded out. Sodom Lane area, Lower David Humphreys Road. Those people don't have any skin in the game of the association. So I don't know if they would be willing to contribute.
So us as a city commission, as I said, you got a motion on the floor, instruct the corporation council to deal with it, to protect those people downstream, because the people upstream ain't taking care of their property.
As I read Ryan's report, there may be some maintenance things that need to be done at the basin, but it was also, as I interpreted the report, the problems that are occurring downstream on Sodom Lane are unrelated to the functioning of the basin, because many of these drainage catch basins on the roadway are insufficient to capture the runoff that ends up downstream or down the road. They're not even going into the basin.
That's a different issue.
We're
dealing with the problem maintenance issues on this.
I just want to temper people's expectations as to what removing this sediment will do. What it will do is allow the basin to function more closely to the way it was intended. What it will not do is stop flooding at David Humphreys Road.
Right. That's a whole nother.
That's
another issue.
Just want to make it
unrelated.
Trying to make. Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
we're happy to see if we can get some deferred maintenance taken care of. But I think at the end of the day, it's not necessarily going to address the primary issues that the neighborhood is experiencing.
Or the shovel will be done by now.
And it all came from.
I'll second Ray's motion.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Anyone opposed? All right. Moving on. Motion carries. Move on to 11C. 11C, informal discussion. We had added this before informal discussion for the 26-27 fiscal year budget information for planning purposes and downtown planning. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I requested this to be placed on the agenda. What started was, I think I mentioned in a previous meeting or so that I'm against window gates and door gates and bars. And I drafted actually about a three-sentence addendum or a text change to our regulations that would prohibit that. But then I started thinking, you know, there's a lot of other regulations that need to be addressed. One of them came up tonight with regard to bed and breakfast. Yep. I want to work on that. There's a lot more serious issues that need to be addressed. And you know, to make some of those changes, the minor ones, you know, we can maybe do ourselves. But if we're examining broad swipes and scope and focuses of our regulations, we really need to have some financial resources to get a consultant planner to assist us in doing that. So that's why I wanted to place this on the agenda. So I'm sure we need more discussion on it. Maybe we can all think about what things that we want to have addressed in the regulations or that need to be addressed, formulate a list of it. I don't know if the subcommittee is necessary to do that or
what.
I think, you know, it would be an input from all of us.
Yeah. What I think we'll do is I'll get with Brian Hall and we'll see what the building department zoning has for line items in there, what's allocated for engineering, and, you know, start there to see what is there and what isn't. And then we could at least look at it and decide where we want to go from there.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I wrote that about the window gates, window and door gates. You know, there we also had discussions about architectural regulation.
Right.
And not that we want to design buildings, but you know what a lot of towns do is they'll have maybe a 3 or 4 page standards of architectural. What do we want to see? What are the preferred materials that we want to see? Do we want to see brick? Do we want to see stone? What when a facade changes, what percentage of the facade change is going to trigger an architectural review? Certainly all new buildings would. What kind of features do we want to see on these buildings? What kind of window treatments? Things like that. So, you know, that type of thing is a little bit more in depth than just a 3 or 4 sentence or 2 paragraph change in our regulations. And we may need some assistance to do that.
Yeah, that's, you know, we've discussed it before and we've gotten to the point where I believe this commission has gotten us to where we are on everything that we can do in-house. But when it comes to downtown and the blank canvas that we have, we're going to need professional input to get us over the finish line. So I think that's a good start to see where we are, what we have budgeted, what we don't, and where we go from there.
And if I could add, because I brought this up a while, months ago, you know, and it, just don't have time. Yep. And it's a lot of detail, but I think we should move on this as quickly as possible. I don't know if we got to go to Board Alderman, look for money, or whatever we got to do. Because right now, and I said it before, somebody could go pull a permit on a piece of property on this side of the street right now, put up literally anything they want.
Yeah.
Well, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Then we're going to be saying, hey, why did we talk about it?
This is the perfect time to do it because the budgets and the departments are all it's all getting put together right now for this coming new fiscal year. So now's the perfect time to do it.
And in part of that, in looking at the downtown regulations, I had a question specifically for Brian.
Yeah.
And you don't have to answer it tonight. It might be pretty involved. But we have the lawsuit with Derby Downtown LLC going on.
Factory Street.
That approval, that's for a development in our downtown district.
Yes.
That approval occurred in February of 2020. What's that?
Before then.
Well, I know. Well, I'm going to say that. It may be earlier. You know, my reading of the state statutes is that approval has expired.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with any.
I thought it was any, 13 years.
There was 5 years.
There was an emergency act in April of 2020. That said that any current permit, any valid permit, would be good for a period of 14 years with the opportunity for an extension of 5 years.
But that was because
I retired.
Underneath that, emergency COVID bill?
Yes.
And none of that was rescinded or repealed? We don't know.
No, it was rescinded to the point that a permit that is given today is good for 5 years.
But at that time, I remember that. That was a big point of discussion.
So there was, and just a little bit of background, in the recession, there was an effort to take a permit that was valid for 5 years and extend it to 9 years.
Maybe you can take a look at the status of that. And quite frankly, the reason why I ask is more now I'd like to take a look at it.
And
I'm not familiar with the litigation, but I can take a look at it.
I don't think it's litigation. It was approved. It was a planned development district.
No, but there was litigation, not with the city, but between the fire.
Still going on. I think it is. Okay, I see what I can find out.
I can give you the file on that, Paul, too, if you're curious about what was approved.
Okay. I looked at it years ago.
I'll email you what I got.
Anything else, Paul?
No, that's all I have.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, can I just ask what the action items are then for moving forward with pulling together what our budget is and what we're looking to do, like what's expected next meeting, you know?
Oh, I think, you know, Paul, you and Raymond, but I think the first step is to see, we'll go to Brian and get the department line items that already exist. What sections or subsections are in those line items, what money's allocated to what. If there's nothing in what we already have established in the department, then we'll create something to do what we want.
But if there's already a line item that we don't know, or, you know, that kind of gives us the parameter of what we're looking to do, then we'll use that and we'll either add to it or find out the details. But
do we have an update, you know, on the status of the special exception application and the site plan applications that the subcommittee brought before the commission? Have they been approved or not approved? Do we?
We did.
We did. Was it based on Corporation Counsel's?
They had no
comments.
No comments, right?
We never commented.
Okay, so they're recently, Kevin. They should be using those downstairs.
Kevin, are you still there?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have those. If you
yeah, we're using them.
Huh?
He's using them.
You're yeah, using... we're using them. Good. Yeah, okay. We haven't had any activity for a little bit, but we've had some people come in, and we've guided them with especially the pre-application checklist, which has been very helpful.
That's going to help you, yeah.
And once we've gotten to that point, seems like everybody's kind of stopped.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of like, what? I was like, no, you got to do this.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. We've had a lot of people come in for various businesses, restaurants, blah, blah. But once we've given that list, it's definitely whether now they're trying to put the information together to present it to us, or they've been saying, no, we don't know, but the activity has stopped.
We made it as streamlined as possible.
And what I think is doing is helping. Because I think what we were getting was a lot of information presented that was vague, not maybe well thought out. Now we're saying if you want to go forward, we need this at the beginning to be able to even move forward.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? If not, we'll move to item number 12, election of officers. So at the beginning of the year, we usually, for the following year to come, we usually vote in a chairman for the commission to hold till next term. So I'll open the floor up to nominations for chair. Do we have any nominations?
Nominate Gino for chairman.
Do I have a second? Do we have a second for that nomination? No second on that nomination? Okay. Are there any other nominations? All right.
Yeah, I'll nominate myself, Anello Malerba.
I don't think you could, Owen. Well, if there's no other nominations, then we'll just keep it the way it is and we'll move forward. Motion to table. Do I have a motion to table that or no?
A motion to table.
Okay, thank you.
Should we accept nominations for vice chair? Without chair. Okay.
Yeah. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
You got it.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Anyone oppose it? All right. So motion to table till to be determined. We'll move on to number 13, adoption of the 2026 regular meeting schedule. In the documents that we have that are posted on there is the calendar for the upcoming year. Everything stays the same. Third Tuesday of every month. Do I have a motion to approve the 2026 regular meeting schedule?
Motion to approve the 20.
Okay, Dave. Second, Joe.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. We'll move on to number 14. Do I have a motion to make the payment of bills if they are deemed correct?
Motion to make the payment of bills.
Okay, Joe,
Once
do
they
I have a
look
second?
correct.
Everybody want a second? Ryan's not getting paid this month. Thank you for your donation, Ryan.
I'll second.
All in favor? Anyone opposed? All right, motion carries. And then we'll move on to number 15, motion to adjourn at 9:18.
Motion to adjourn at 9:18.
Thank you, Joe. Second. Raymond, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you very much.